Good afternoon, everybody. All right. I originally submitted this for an hour talk, and we have 20 minutes, so we're going to go really fast. There won't be questions at the end, but I will be going straight over to the Netflix table if you want to come talk to me about bots. You don't have to talk about jobs or anything. So what we're talking about today is ChatOps and how Netflix uses that in incident management and kind of where we're going with it in the future. Starting this whole thing, if my clicker works. Working? Stupid tech. All right. So I started about 6 months ago at Netflix, and when I started, some people heard that I know a little bit of JavaScript, and they said, hey, we have this project that's written in JavaScript, and we need a maintainer for it, so here you go. And they handed me the chatbot that we use for incident management. And over time, you know, Slack has come along, and a lot of people really like Slack, and so the developers have kind of spoken at Netflix, and IT has acquiesced, and we're moving to Slack. And that means that that bot needs to be updated to move to Slack. And Slack and HipChat have completely different APIs for things like posting images and doing postbacks and things like that. So it means that we have to rewrite most of the plugins for the bot. And it's written in JavaScript, and kind of, I have some problems with that. And what happened was this morning, I was thinking about this. You know, I'm coming to a conference to speak, and I figure I ought to take a shower. So, you know, and when you're in the shower, you know, you think. And I realized that what we do with ChatOps and the job that it does for us is it kind of scratches some itches, right? We're not solving the world's problems in ChatOps. There are too many problems with it. For example, who owns your availability? It's like a wedding. There's only one thing to say. I do. I own my own availability. So if I'm managing an incident and Slack goes down and I don't have a backup plan, that's my fault. That's my problem. And so, you know, that got me thinking about, you know, we can't put too much logic that's built straight into the bot. You know, we generally want to build things like services. You know, if there's something really critical that we're doing in terms of automation in the infrastructure, we put it on a node and run it in a daemon. You know, it could be a little Rails app, a little Node app, it could be in Puppet or whatever. But the bot is kind of just an interface into services that we use to do things. So Netflix has a pretty rich environment of services that do all kinds of things, like provide graphs for monitoring, and I can do things like look up people's white pages. We use PagerDuty. So really, I'm tying a whole bunch of different services together and presenting an interface to my users, largely my team, but all the rest of Netflix, when there's an incident, use those functions to communicate and to understand what's going on. So really what we're talking about is scratching little itches, right? And the kind of the nice thing, the reason why I said, well, I'm rewriting this, so I don't want to write it in JavaScript. I really like other things. You know, HubBot kind of has, it's written in JavaScript, it uses CoffeeScript, which is a DSL on top of JavaScript that compiles down. It looks a little bit like Python, and it's nice. And you can still write plugins in JavaScript, but it still suffers from a lot of things in terms of when I went to install the bot the first time, I run npm install, installs, I think, like 32 modules. And you look in there, it's like 500 files under the no modules directory. And that, to me, kind of, you know, that's a big itchy spot for me, is being an old school sysadmin and SRE, is I don't like seeing lots of code that, like, I don't know what it does. There's all kinds of files in there I don't care about, but they're on my systems. And so, you know, while it's kind of a lot of people running it production, it's not good enough. It kind of just makes me a little itchy and uncomfortable. Wrong rodent. I decided to write it in Go. Go has a lot, scratches a lot of my itches. For example, in JavaScript, in Node, it's a single-threaded application. So if you are calling a REST service, you have to start an XHR request and then register a callback that'll get called when it's done. And this all works, and everybody does it, and it's kind of fine. But it's annoying, and the code takes a long time to get into my head, right? When I come back to the spot, I'm in operations. You know, the idea is that I'm going to get this thing written, put it out in the production, and once it's up and running and debugged, I only touch it every few weeks, maybe once a month. And I have to load all that code back into my head and understand it again. And when it's built around callbacks, you know, if you're writing this code every day as a software engineer, that's one thing, because you keep it in your head. But as SREs, we have a different problem in that we come back to our code once a month or once a quarter, or sometimes you know, it'll be 2 years and nobody's touched the code and now we have to change it. And grokking all that code is really difficult. So in kind of the way I scratch that itch and go is all of the plugins in the new bot are blocking code. So if I'm calling a REST service, I simply just call it and I let it wait and I let it block. And that way, all of the code that is in my plugins reads from the top down. And so that's something just kind of in terms of approaching a project as an SRE, you come at it a little bit differently. Testing, right? Which we should all test, right? Testing is good. But the problem with ChatOps is a lot of these things are really difficult to test. You have to hit the Slack service, you have to abuse it sometimes to, you know, push things into the channel and then verify that everything works. So if I can get other tools to kind of give me some confidence going in forward with a deployment that my code is doing what I think it is, then I want those. And the Go compiler provides some of that in terms of, you know, I have strongly typed code for the most part, so that when my stuff builds, most of the time it works the way I expect it to. That's what I was just talking about, jumped ahead. I just talked about this a little bit, dependencies everywhere. So the new bot has a very small set of dependencies. I think I'm using like 5 modules off GitHub tops, and they're all vendored in the internal repo. And so I don't have to worry about this kind of NPM mess, you know, the left pad thing that happened a couple weeks ago. You know, that just kind of got this fuel on the fire. I was already going down this direction, but it's just something that, you know, we need to think about when we're deploying code internally. One file per a plugin, one file per a thing. And this is something that existed in the old bot, in that there would be a single repo with like 90 files in it that are like, you know, little JavaScript things. And then there's one file that actually has code logic in it. So I have to check out 15 different repos to basically maintain the bot and go into that repo, make a slight change, build the whole thing, push it into Artifactory, and then push it out. So iteration is very slow, and it requires a lot of, again, cognitive load to remember how to do these things. The bot is generally in one repo. It's in two now because we split out the kind of common stuff for open source. I'll have the link at the end. And then every plugin is basically one function. And that's how it started very early on. It's one Go function. It receives a single event. And it has everything that you need to basically do what you need to do in a bot. The event that it receives, one of the things with Hubbot that I found kind of lacking, and so I'm not saying you need to use my framework, but if you're looking at evaluating building a ChatOps system, these are things to think about, is Hubbot by default just hands you a string of text that says, Atobi said, bang, ping, so-and-so, right? And I wanted more information than that. I want to know what the user ID is. I want to know what channel was it. I don't want to have to parse text strings to figure this stuff out all the damn time. And so the bot actually takes care of pulling all that stuff out of the Slack event that it receives, pushes it into a kind of an abstraction, and then hands that to you, to your function, so that you can make decisions on what channel am I in, what user was it, what is the ID for Slack in case I want to do a post back. I don't have to do a whole bunch of looking stuff up that the bot should have already handed me in the first place. And then it is an abstraction, but it's a leaky one, because one of the things that I think a lot of the bots are missing today is really tight integration with the chat service that they use, whether it's Slack or HipChat or IRC. You know, they have different functions that are available that are really handy. And this is where we'll start to get into some of the event or incident management. Is, you know, in Slack, they have this really cool thing where you can attach reactions to messages, right? So I'm managing an incident and somebody posts a graph that says, hey, look, there's this really cool tower on this graph. Is this something? And I go, you know, I don't think that's it. Poo emoji, right? And then now I know I have a way to basically very quickly, maybe we're not going to use poo emojis because that would be kind of rude, but to basically assign metadata to messages during the incident so I don't rely on my human memory that's very leaky. I don't know about yours, but mine is. 2 days later at the incident review, wondering like, oh, when did that happen? Was that, oh, we're screwing through the text. Was that a good idea? What did we say about that? We can start to gather little bits of data, and it's real easy. It's all in the same interface. And so that's just something you get from that tight integration with the chat service. So this is what the HAL events look like. I looked at a bunch of other bots. Probably the most promising one outside of that came after we got down the road on this was the OpsC one they're working on. But basically, the leaky part is this little original interface. So I passed through the Slack event. So if it's a reaction added or a star added or if it's a message and all the different things that Slack tells you are happening, if you want to, you can grab that back out, dereference it. Now all of a sudden you can do go back through and get a hold of the client and do full power access to Slack. You don't need that power all the time, but when you want it, it's there. So kind of getting more into kind of the incident management side, the current bot is really handy. It has a bunch of neat functions like I can say, you know, the service Zool, our load balancer service, is kind of doing something funny. I want to get a Zool person on the phone. So I can do bang on call Zool, and it'll go pull the PagerDuty, all the PagerDuty escalation policies, do a string search over them, and then dump a big wall of text in the channel saying all these people, and then you kind of human search it down and figure out that this set of people are the ones that you want to page. You know, besides it being kind of a really precise kind of way to match, find people, it's that kind of scrolling off all of the text, right? When we have a big incident and there are, you know, 500 people in the room that are trying to keep up with what's going on, you don't want to be scrolling off all the text all the time so that people can't read, go and read back up. I mean, that's, if you've been in IRC, that's kind of like the first rule of every IRC channel ever. So the new bot actually does this thing where it just can reply to DM, or at least all the pipe work is there to do it. And this is something that most bots, I think, should be doing. It's a little difficult in HubBot. It could probably be done. I honestly didn't spend enough time to look at it. But in most of the newer frameworks that are coming out, something I hope to see more of is that, you know, when I ask a question that I think it's going to dump a wall of text, I can configure it a personal preference or a per room preference and say, hey, don't send it to the room. Send it to me via DM. And hey, all of a sudden this other cool thing happens is when I want to use the bot as kind of an interface into data in my systems, I can just DM the bot and start asking questions and doing things. And some of them can do that, some can't, but it's a feature I think I would really like to see more people doing. We did some upgrades on top of the bot. So one really simple one that, you know, Brian Tolson, he's in here, came up with is, hey, we're in an incident and things happen, people say things that are interesting, and I just want to put a note and say, what time did it happen, and maybe just a little bit of text. You know, and some of us will have like a piece of paper, or maybe you go flip over to your Jira tab and put a note in there and it emails 9,000 people, or you have a Google Doc open. There's a lot of different ways to manage this, but I want to be able to stay in the bot or in the Slack channel and focus on communicating, which is my job as an incident commander. So you just say bang bookmark, or bang mark is what it is right now. It'll probably change. And it just records the time and a little note. So now when I come back and want to build the incident report based off all this information that my bot has captured, I have kind of a really easy place to get data for the dropdown. So I can say, this is the start, this is the end, and maybe these are interesting things that happened in the middle. And it's just this really easy thing. It's a very simple little plugin. The other thing is, presence in all of the chat systems on pretty much every IM system I've ever used, in HipChat and Slack and IRC, is presence is completely busted. It's useless, right? You can see somebody's got the little green dot, and most of the time it just means that they like picked their phone up and thought about their phone for a second and put it back down. They're so sensitive that you can't really use it as a sense of when somebody's online. So we just have this very simple concept where if you say something in a channel that the bot is in, I know you're actually at a keyboard. So we just record that in a database, and now I can actually go and say for sure, like, hey, you know, I know that Dave is online because he just said something snarky in the other channel, and I can bother him without having to worry about accidentally sending a notification or something. And it was probably something snarky. The other kind of, we have this module that basically talks about our hours. So at Netflix, most of our incidents that we have to handle happen between the hours of 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. The reason why is because that's when our engineers are at the office and they're active and pushing code. You know, during the evening hours, you know, stuff still happens, but generally the teams handle that stuff. You know, if a load balancer tips over, you know, it gets replaced automatically, or the team has their own alerts that fire and they go do it and we don't get involved. So most of the time, it's during the day. So at night, when people go into our channel and say, at here, can you help me please? I need help with incident management. We don't want them to just sit there and hang while, you know, some emails go out and maybe we don't notice it on our phones because it's not coming through PagerDuty and we might not get that alert. So it basically just responds. It says, oh, it's outside of business hours. And here you go. It just says, Core is only here from 9 to 5. If you need us after hours, please page us at. And then it tells you how to page you right straight in the channel. So again, it's that pattern of scratching the itch of when somebody's got a problem, you don't want to tell them, well, go to the here, and then go here, and then go here, and then go here, and do this, and then remember this. It's too much to remember. People are going to, you know, they're going to go look at the wiki, and the process is going to get messed up. If you can keep it all in one channel, that kind of increases the chances that people do the right thing, and it kind of reduces your MTTR in terms of people don't spend time thinking about, like, where do I go to find core? Oh, do I go look at the wiki page to find the process for setting a severity and all this stuff? And then kind of looking forward is there's an archive module, which what we're hoping that is you know, I mentioned the reactions thing earlier, is we're gathering that data. This one isn't complete yet, but it's kind of where we're heading is towards, the goal is to hit like 90% of what we need for an incident report, right? So when you fill out your incident report, usually you open up a new doc and you start copying stuff out of the chat channel, you copy some graphs in and you try to build a timeline. Well, the thing is we have timestamp data in the chat system already. So we should be able to gather that data. But the problem is we need to sort it, right? Because it's going to be, you know, just a whole bunch of text, people offering ideas that maybe didn't work out. But now if we add reactions into the mix, we can start to automatically, during the incident, mark things as being promising or not promising. And we'll figure out the protocol as we go of which emoji or whatever we use. And maybe it'll turn out to be nothing. But the goal is to basically say, when you're managing an incident, you don't need to context switch between 20 different systems. You really only just have the two, the monitoring system, dashboards, and then the chat service. And you put everything in there, and then we can go and actually have a report built for you as a web interface. You can sort things, maybe clean it up a little bit, copy it into a doc, and then work from there. And so instead of trying to make it perfect, get 90% of the way there, solve that much of the problem, and then move on. Another one was the bot uninherited, and probably how many of you have found, especially in ops, like we're all guilty of this, passwords checked into Git repos, like it happens all over the place. And you know, there's a lot of cool new infrastructure coming out, things like HashiCorp's Vault, and you know, Netflix has CryptX. And so we have our internal versions integrated with our internal stuff, but the bot actually has a plugin that basically, or a built-in function that just says, a way to encrypt secrets and store them in its database, because the HALBOT is always tied to a database. So it encrypts the key, the value, and then it has a key, and then I can put all of the like the Slack token and all the like little REST tokens for PagerDuty and all those little things, store them encrypted in a database, and then I don't have to push all that stuff in my Git repo and have this kind of complexity around like, oh, I need to update a token, now I have to redeploy the bot. So that's kind of a more of a deployment feature, but it's something that where I think kind of what I want you to think about and kind of take away from all this is find those little places where you can scratch an itch using the chat ops and not focus on, you know, trying to, you hear about the people that during the outages with Slack, right? If you watch Twitter, people are like, oh, I can't deploy my code because Slack is down. Oh, I can't deploy my code because my distributed source control system, GitHub, is down. You know, those kinds of things, and making sure that your bot actually provides sugar more than it tries to provide pure functionality, because you can't control that service, and you need to be able to do these things in production and during the heat of the moment. Kind of the last little fun feature is I had this little annoying thing in both Slack and HipChat, which was since this bot has a bunch of tables in the database, and a lot of the configuration information is in a table form, I want to be able to just dump it into the channel and say, here you go, this is what all your preferences are, or here's all the plugins that are active. And so there's a picture of it here. The problem is like the text formatting doesn't always work right. Like you can put it in code stuff, and it'll go into the client, and it'll render in variable width font, and it just looks terrible and it's unreadable. This happened in both of them. I didn't really mess with it too much because I was like, this problem just needs to go away. So I started dinking with the Go image library, and then came up with this thing, which is built in, which basically renders it using old school DOS font. And it basically renders a text table as an image, and then posts the image so that it looks nice. And the nice thing about this is if you're on your phone, it actually is legible, and you can scale and zoom and stuff. Whereas in the text, it's a little bit harder with some of the clients to do that. So this was just kind of a fun little hack. I'm kind of curious where this will go with plugin authors if it gets picked up. So that's kind of the overview of where we're going with ChatOps at Netflix. And thank you for coming. And here's the link to the new bot.